You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome in to another new episode and a new week of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Well, even though it's an NFL Sunday, it's the start of a new week, and, well, media day is Friday, camp opens Saturday, so we can officially say it. This week, basketball is back. We're a few short days from finally getting the Rockets to report to camp, and with that, we'll be able to get you guys some audio and some exclusive clips, and hopefully learn a little bit more about Rockets players, what they've been doing with their summer, and what we can expect Mike D'Antoni to work with as camp gets going. In the meantime, one of the things we're looking at, both here at Locked On Rockets and across all teams on the Locked On Podcast Network, are the depth charts. While we're all waiting for training camp to get going, we're breaking down team by team what you can expect from each position. And if you listened to the show at the end of last week, I did a depth chart episode on the guards, and I actually moved point guard and shooting guard together because there's so much overlap with regards to Pat Beverly, James Harden, and Eric Gordon. I think we can agree that those three are largely going to split the minutes at the one and two spots. So with regards to the point guard and shooting guard positions, we combine those. Small forward is a little bit different. Yes, there will be some overlap in which the Rockets play a small forward as a stretch four from time to time, especially with Mike D'Antoni. But seeing as how you have an $80 million player, Ryan Anderson, entrenched at power forward, I would imagine he gives you at least 32 minutes a game, and hopefully you also have Donatas Moniunis behind him, assuming the Rockets are able to strike a deal. So, by and large, there will be a little overlap, but I think small forward is a little more segmented, so that's what I want to look at today. We all know Trevor Ariza is the starter, and while he's been a good player for some time, we certainly saw some dip on the defensive end last year. Metrics, both traditional numbers and especially the more analytic models showed you a decline in his defense. Now, how much is him getting slow? Trevor will be 31 years old this year. That's not necessarily above the hill. It's not a point where you typically see a huge fall off, but the Rockets have asked an awful lot from him the last 2 years. I really think he's a guy, an underrated candidate for the Rockets' lack of playmakers to really strike and limit his effectiveness, because with the Rockets not really having that secondary creator after James Harden, at various times, Trevor Ariza has had to take on that role, and it's not one that he's well-equipped to do. So with him having to take so much of an offensive workload, I think that's limited his defensive ability just a little bit. And I also think, quite frankly, that some of the team's lackluster defense spills over into effort even from guys like Trevor Ariza and Pat Beverly. When the team struggled defensively, it's hard to give, you know, to give everything you have if you feel like your teammates aren't. So I think when the Rockets got into this poor defensive culture a year ago, that actually played a role in the individual declines, even for players such as Ariza, who you would normally have high expectations for. Now the question is, how do you fix it? Well, if you want a little bit of silver lining, his numbers on the offensive end actually improved a little bit. His overall field goal percentage went up from 40.2 in the 2014-2015 season to 41.6. His three-point percentage actually went up from 35% to over 37%. So his shooting, even though he took around the same shots, he got more efficient. So if you want to look at for any silver lining, it's not like he fell off across the board. The defensive decline is noticeable because when you think Trevor Ariza, you think defense first. He's been a guy throughout his NBA career, now going into his, 11th year, I believe, or 12th year, actually. You think of him as a defensive stopper. He's evolved into a three-point shooter over time, now a 3-and-D guy. So when you see the defensive decline, it is alarming, but it's not like his entire game fell off a cliff. So I don't think it's as simple as saying, well, he can't do it anymore. He's over the hill. It's just it's a little thing, and so the question is, how do you manage it? And the key to me with Trevor Ariza is managing the minutes. The last 2 years in Houston since his return, he's played over 35 minutes a game, also played over 35 minutes a game in the 2013-2014 season in Washington. at 31 years old, I think you'd really like to cap him at about 32 minutes. That's what he's played most of his NBA career. And I think especially now that he's in his 30s, if you want him to be that kind of 3 and D guy that can be a stopper, I think keeping him into the low 30s is a big part of maintaining him having the energy to be the defensive stopper that we've seen him be from time to time at the small forward position. So what does that mean for everyone else at that spot? Well, it should mean more playing time. So when you look at the position, there's going to be 48 minutes a game, obviously, at small forward. Here's how I see Ariza. I'm going to say 24 minutes a game at small forward and 8 minutes a game at power forward. Now, I don't think Ariza is going to be playing small ball power forward every game. I think that's a stretch. I think it's going to be situational and dependent on matchups. There are going to be some times where the Rockets, you know, they want to have that super offense group and they close with Beverly, Harden, Gordon, Ariza at the four and Capella at the five. You know, they want that speed and athleticism. And there are going to be others where the team is big enough that that lineup would just get shredded on defense and especially on the glass. So you're going to pick and choose. And so I'm just going to say, on average, he gets 8 minutes a game at power forward in those small ball sets. It's not necessarily going to happen every game. Some games he might get 12, other games he might get 4 minutes. But let's say 8 overall and then 24 at a small forward, which puts him at 32 minutes a game. Hopefully that limits his usage to where he can be a little more effective on defense. But more importantly, that also leaves you 24 minutes a game for other players not named Trevor Ariza to step up and play those minutes. And really, it's one of the more intriguing questions on this Rockets team, because after Trevor Ariza, you don't know who that backup is going to be. You've got Corey Brewer, who played that role last year. You've got young prospects in Sam Decker and KJ McDaniels. Now, before we break down those three, I want to say I do believe, as I said in the guard preview, the Rockets are going to play a lot of three-guard sets. I don't think it's going to be a ton, but you are going to have Beverly, Harden, and Gordon playing together. So I don't think that you're necessarily looking at a 24, 25 minutes per game role for one of those other three guys. You'll probably give at least 5 minutes a game, we'll say, to Eric Gordon. So really, you're looking at one 20-minute per game role, which is still important. It's just not as crucial as it might look at first glance for someone in that trio of Brewer, McDaniels, and Decker. And so when you look at those three, they each bring different skills to the table. Brewer obviously brings the experience. He was a huge part of their team that made the run to the Western Conference Finals in 2015. And I know he frustrated everyone last year. Everyone on Twitter just took shots at him because he had these mind-blowing turnovers. He could not space the floor, shooting below 30% from three. And he's an easy target. However, the Rockets never really pulled him out of the rotation. And the reason why is that when you have the dynamics that they had in place last year with a young interim coach in J.B. Bickerstaff and a team that's constantly desperate, basically just trying to get into the playoffs, playing every game like it's your last, and with an owner that has an expectation of, you know, contending for a title, those were the stated expectations, it's tough to pull someone like Brewer, who just one season prior to that played a huge role in your rotation. And really, the Rockets don't win Game 6 against the Clippers without him. They aren't even in the Western Conference Finals, if not for Corey Brewer. He was a huge positive impact to that team. So when you're looking at that same team, 90% the same exact supporting cast, trying to scrap their way and claw their way back into what they were a year ago, naturally, you're going to want to err on the side of veterans. You're going to err on the side of experience. And especially when you have a young coach like J.B. Bickerstaff, I understand what he was thinking. He did not want to turn in the middle of a playoff race in which even losing one or two games could be the difference between getting in the playoffs and missing altogether, you know, give a chance to KJ McDaniels. And so when I think about the 2015-2016 Rockets season, one word comes to mind, and it's desperate. From the players to the coach to the ownership, there was so much pressure and they were so desperate to try and find themselves. Now, I think it's going to be a little different feel between the Rockets front office and the coaching staff this year, because I think everyone's taken a step back. Now, certainly the Rockets hope they can be a better team in this upcoming season than they were a year ago, But I don't think there's that same expectation. You're not coming off the weight of a Western Conference Finals run. You're not a stated championship contender. While the Rockets are a good team, certainly they're not on the level of the Warriors and Cavaliers, and we can all agree on that. So I think you're going to see the Rockets take a step back and be in more of a building process. So I think that's why you could see them. I don't think Brewer's ineligible for the role, but I don't think his experience is going to be quite as important as it was a year ago. That's the sense I get from this. The other thing with Brewer as well is the contract. He was re-signed in July 2015 to basically a three-year, $24 million deal, making about $8 million a season. In the first year of a three-year contract, it's tough to tell Les Alexander, hey, you know, we think we whiffed on that and just sit the guy. Now that he's entering the second year, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal because after this year, and really from the Rockets' standpoint, their cap figure in 2016-2017 is not that big of a deal because free agency's over. They're really not going to need cap space until next summer. And by the time they need cap space next July, Brewer's going to be an expiring contract. He's only going to have 1 year left on his deal. So whereas last year would have been very difficult, you know, a few months after re-signing him to tell Les Alexander, hey, I think we whiffed on this. I don't think you're going to see that same contract pressure because what's the worst case? Even if Brewer isn't a rotation player, you know, you can get rid of him next summer as an expiring contract. And really, an expiring contract in the new world of NBA salaries, $8 million a year is really not that bad. So I don't think it's an albatross contract, and it never was an albatross contract, but I think there were a lot of factors, as I said earlier, the desperation of the team, the need for experience, and the contract that made it very difficult to pull Corey Brewer from that role a season ago. I don't think those are in place now. Now, could Corey Brewer win that role and get that 20 minutes per game spot? He could, but he's got to show a lot more. He's got to drastically reduce the turnovers. He's got to make a lot of threes. His ability to play in transition and handle the ball some, that those are useful skills in a Mike D'Antoni offense, so I wouldn't write him off. However, he has really got to work on his jump shot, and you know, a lot of players do it over the summer. Maybe he can take a step forward, but evidence suggests otherwise. So if Brewer doesn't get that spot, you look at Sam Decker and KJ McDaniels. Now, KJ McDaniels, he's been with the Rockets longer. They acquired him at the 2015 deadline, but he's only played sparingly since then. The case for McDaniels to play is that, well, the Rockets obviously do want to try and get a 3 and D player. Now, he hasn't had the three-point part of the equation yet, but he's certainly been he's shown flashes of being a very good defender in what limited action he's played. And when you look at the Rockets and how they offered Kent Bazemore of Atlanta $72 million in the offseason, it's not that the Rockets don't care about defense. They clearly do. It just so happens that the two offensive players, Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, were who said yes. You don't have full control over who says yes or no to your contract. But the Rockets did want more of a defensive presence at the wing position. That's why they went after Kent Bazemore. And that's something that KJ McDaniels can potentially provide. He's extremely athletic, has good instincts. So that's the case for him playing. You know, you look at these other guys at the wing positions. Certainly Ariza, as we talked about earlier, you hope he's a better defender. But James Harden and Eric Gordon, they're not exactly going to make an all-defensive team. You know, Ryan Anderson at the four spot is not going to be a good defender. So if McDaniels can earn playing time, well, he's potentially a plus defender. He's someone else who can slide in there. So I do think he's going to have a shot. What you worry about is, well, does he have enough of a jump shot to stay on the floor? Because in a Mike D'Antoni offense, you need to space the floor. His three-point shot, it's something the Rockets have been working on. I don't think they've given up on him as a shooter. His shot needs a lot of work. I know they've particularly been looking at the mechanics of it. So you always hope he's young enough, KJ, that you know, you could still see 1 year at click, him take a big step forward, but the Rockets are not going to count on it until they actually see it in training camp and in preseason games. But if he can make threes at a respectable clip and play the defense that we know he's capable of, can he earn that role? Absolutely. Now, last but certainly not least is Sam Decker. And personally, if I had to bet, he's the guy who I would put as a slight favorite for the job. I think it's very close. If I had to pin it, I would give... I'd put Decker as maybe a 40% shot and Brewer and McDaniels each at 30%. But I think people are artificially down on Decker because he didn't play last year. But really, this is a guy who, you know, a mid-first-round pick in 2015, a lot of people had him as a top 10 pick. A lot of talent. And he was a great player in Summer League. He outplayed KJ McDaniels on that Summer League team in Las Vegas. Really showed flashes on both ends of the court, but especially offensively, a very heads-up player. He has not a great shot, but a good enough shot from the perimeter that he can space the floor and make teams respect him from behind the arc, but he can handle the ball better than McDaniels. He can make plays happen in transition. And really, from Sam Decker, you see a lot of flashes of what you saw out of Chandler Parsons when he was a rookie. That kind of energy, that guy that can make plays happen in transition on the offensive glass and just do a lot of the dirty work. I don't think it's a bad comparison to say rookie Chandler Parsons is something you hope for out of, second year Sam Decker, but he may as well be a rookie since he barely played last year. The question for Sam, he's sort of in between. Whereas Brewer and McDaniels have obvious strengths, Brewer with his experience and the fact that guys in the Rockets locker room trust him and like him, they've been to war with Corey Brewer before. That's his advantage. Cage McDaniels, he's clearly the superior defender. He's someone that really, no matter who you put him on, you can look at Cage McDaniels as a clearly above average defender. Whereas Sam Decker, you know, he's a blend. He's not a great defender, but he's long enough to be a pretty good one. He's not a great shooter, but, well, he is the best shooter of the three. We'll give him that. I wouldn't call Sam Decker a shooter, but he is better than KJ McDaniels and Corey Brewer. As far as his offensive game, he doesn't do anything great, but he does a lot of things pretty good. So while Brewer and McDaniels might have, you know, one really good skill, Decker's more of a jack-of-all-trades. But when you look at what they are trying to do with Mike D'Antoni, to me, I would see them erring on the side of Decker because he checks more boxes. You know, it's really tough for me to see them committing a rotation spot to someone until that player proves they can shoot. So with KJ, I want to believe he's going to develop a respectable jump shot, but we'll see in the preseason. He'll have his chance, but it's one of those things for me, I'll believe it when I see it. Sam Decker, I've seen enough. I know the Rockets are very high on him. I know he is a very high IQ player. And so to me, when you look at those 20 to 25 minutes behind Trevor Ariza, he's the simplest fit. And the other thing that I would say, I think it's clear that Decker has the most upside. Brewer, he's fairly capped out. McDaniels, maybe, but even if he develops a jump shot, he certainly doesn't appear to be a creator. Sam Decker, the upside, he's not only does he have a decent jump shot, but he's shown flashes at Wisconsin in the summer league of being a solid creator off the dribble. Sam Decker, of those three, clearly has the most upside when you're looking at the next 5 years of his NBA career. And so I think that's finally going to be more of a priority for the Rockets, because as I said, what this all comes back to is that this year, the Rockets are not as desperate as they were a season ago. Yes, they want to win. Yes, it's going to be a priority, but it's not going to be the same, well, if we lose this game, heads are going to roll. Something terrible has happened. I think they realize that they have to take a step back. They're trying to rebuild the foundation. They brought in Mike D'Antoni because he's going to install a system. So you're not going to be operating in the shadow of a Western Conference Finals team and just trying to put all the pieces back together exactly as they were. You're going to be constructing a new puzzle. So when you look at those minutes behind Trevor Ariza, I think you're going to see the Rockets be more willing to gamble on upside. And for me, I would say Sam Decker is that guy. However, I would not write off KJ McDaniels, because certainly he can be an above average defensive player. And you hope that one of these years, the jump shot is finally going to improve and take off. We'll see once training camp gets rolling on Saturday, but for now, I'm going to say that Decker is the slight favorite, with both Brewer and KJ McDaniels not far behind. Now, one guy I haven't mentioned is Michael Beasley. I haven't forgotten about him. It's just that in a Mike D'Antoni system, generally my sense is that if there's a player that's a hybrid 2-3, or in Beasley's case, a hybrid 3-4, you can almost always count on him playing the bigger position, because Mike D'Antoni wants the most skilled players that he can get on the basketball floor. So is Michael Beasley, does he have any potential to play a role with the Rockets? I'm not high on him in the Mike D'Antoni system because I don't think he moves the ball that well, but I wouldn't rule him out. Certainly he was a key scorer for them down the stretch of last season, and, you know, maybe if there are certain injuries or some weird composition with the team, then yes, the way he can shoot and put up volume shots could be useful. But I'd be surprised if it's at the three. I think he factors more into the power forward mix if he's going to join the rotation. I don't see the Rockets, especially with Beasley's extreme defensive limitations on the perimeter, putting him in the small forward mix on any sort of regular basis. And the other thing with Beasley is that at this point, we know exactly who he is. It ties back into the upside theme. With Sam Decker, Cajun McDaniels, those are players that might become more with playing time, with development. Michael Beasley, yes, he can have a role on a good NBA team, but he's not going to magically become someone else. We know the player he is, so I don't think he's going to jump KJ McDaniels or Sam Decker anyway in terms of how the Rockets view development. And with regards to Beasley's particular skill set, I think it's more useful at the power forward spot than the small forward spot on this team. So we will talk Michael Beasley, but I think I'm going to do that more in the coming days when we get to the power forward rotation. Anyway, that note, time to wrap up. It's been a good episode talking Rockets small forwards. You can expect more from us throughout the week. On Twitter, you can follow me at Ben Dubose. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets. And you can always email the show at lockedonrockets@gmail.com with any questions or sponsorship inquiries. I would also urge you guys to check out Locked On Texans. That's our sister podcast covering everything going on with Houston's pro football team. And they're awesome 2-0 start, hopefully 3-0 with the Patriots starting Jacoby Brissett in just a few days in Foxborough. But yeah, Locked On Texans is finally getting underway tonight, as I understand it. So if you want to go over to the Locked On Podcast Network and subscribe to them, you can hear from my buddy Robert Land and also Aaron Wilson of the Houston Chronicle. And I think they're going to have some really great interviews and insight for you on what's going on with the Texans. So on that happy note, time to sign off, and you'll be hearing from me a lot for the remainder of this week and, well, the remainder of this entire Rockets season. Hopefully a fun one. Be back soon.